Good evening. I just hope this doesn't fall off. I've discovered that my head's too small for it. Doesn't quite fit my ears. So, we're looking tonight at what's here represented by cranberry juice, but we'll call it wine, for want of a better word. We're looking at the words of Jesus in Mark chapter 14, verses 23 and 24. We're told Jesus took a cup, gave thanks, and gave it to his disciples. This is at the Last Supper, with the words, "This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many." Okay, so it's those words, "This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many," that we're concentrating on tonight. Last month, Mary spoke about feasting on Jesus' presence, and next month we're going to be looking at Jesus' other words about this proclaiming his death until he comes. But tonight we're concentrating on the idea of the blood. And the title I was given, as Terry said, is Communion, the Sealed Covenant. So I think that his words have three parts to them, really. He talks of a covenant. He talks about his blood being involved in this covenant and the fact that it's poured out for many people. Covenants, it's not really a word we use a great deal now, but they were really important in the ancient world, and they are still important today, but most of us don't use the word unless we happen to be lawyers, I guess, or perhaps accountants. Accountants use the word. I looked at Wikipedia, which is always a good place to start for anything, as long as you're not doing an academic essay. And it said this: "A covenant, in its most general sense and historical sense, is a solemn promise to engage in or refrain from a specified action. Under historical English common laws, a covenant was distinguished from an ordinary contract by the presence of a seal." Okay, so we're talking about a seal here. Now, I guess most of us would think of a seal in terms of that blob of wax with our signet ring shoved in it, or whatever kings did. Sorry? An animal. Yes, thank you, Paul. It's always good to have Paul with us for these things. Yeah. But anyway, moving on swiftly. In the ancient world, covenants tended to be sealed with blood, so not with a blob of wax, but with blood, and we'll look at that a little bit. But look, thinking about this topic, the whole idea of a covenant, I'm just amazed that God himself wants to make a covenant with us. Because what's a covenant doing? It's making that promise. Why does God, Almighty God, who created heavens and earth, have to make a promise to us, have to make a promise to me? Is it because we can't trust him that we need some sealed promise? Or is it to do with us? And I suspect it's much more to do with us. The fact that we need constantly to be assured again and again of his love and his care for us. We've thought of that tonight. Kate, in singing that lovely song to us, spoke about Jesus being the same yesterday, today, and forever. God's the same. But we need that assurance. And so, in a sense, the covenant, well, very much the covenant is for our benefit. It's not for God's benefit. Covenants are places and points in history where God has intervened to reveal himself and his character to people so that people can have fellowship with him. That's really important. So we see throughout the Old Testament various covenants. After God flooded the earth, he made a covenant with Noah that he would never again destroy the earth by flood. When he called Abraham out to become the father of a special people, he made a covenant as he started that new nation. And then with Moses and the people of Israel, as they escaped from Egypt, again, there's a covenant promising that he will be their God and that they will be his people. And then, of course, there's the promise of the new covenant in Jeremiah. And I'm going to read that to you because I think it's just so important that we remember again the words of that covenant. So it's Jeremiah 31, verses 31 to 34. The days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the people of Israel and with the people of Judah. It will not be like the covenant I made with their ancestors when I took them by the hand to lead them out of Egypt, because they broke my covenant, though I was a husband to them, declares the Lord. This is the covenant that I will make with the people of Israel after that time, declares the Lord. I will put my law in their minds and write it on their hearts. I will be their God, and they will be my people. No longer will they teach their neighbor or say to one another, "Know the Lord," because they will all know me, from the least of them to the greatest, declares the Lord. For I will forgive their wickedness and will remember their sins no more. And while the best manuscripts of Mark don't actually include Jesus' words saying that this is the new covenant, that does appear in other places, like in Luke and in 1 Corinthians. And in Matthew, he links the whole idea of this covenant with forgiveness of sins. So it's very clear that this is this new covenant that he is inaugurating through his death, and that he is having the wine as part of. The wine is going to be the seal. It's a covenant of relationship. It's not about law. It's about relationship. Each person can know the Lord, and each is forgiven and reconciled to God. He will remember their sins no more. So that's the idea of covenant. And this leads very much on to the reference of this covenant as being with Jesus' blood. This is my blood of the covenant. And as I mentioned earlier, covenants in the ancient world were very, very much sealed with blood. When God made the covenants with Noah, with Abraham, with the people of Israel, they were all sealed with blood. The seal makes it not just a vague agreement, but a solemn promise. In Exodus 24, we read that after Moses had brought them the Ten Commandments, he builds some stone pillars to represent the 12 tribes of Israel, and then he sends the young Israelite men off to make some sacrifices, burnt offerings, young bulls, as fellowship offerings. And then Moses took half the blood, put it in bowls, and the other half he splashed against the altar. Then he took the book of the covenant and read it to the people. They responded, "We will do everything the Lord has said, we will obey." Moses then took the blood, sprinkled it on the people, and said, "This is the blood of the covenant that the Lord has made with you in accordance with all the words." So the blood was sprinkled on the people, as well as having been splashed on the altar. Now, I personally, being very squeamish, I can't stand the sight of blood. I think this is really most unpleasant. However, it's very visual, and I'm sure very memorable. I think if you've ever been splattered with blood, you remember it, partly because it never comes out of your clothes again. So here it is, God sealing the covenant with the blood of animals, splashed on the people, splashed on the altar, representing God. As they were having this meal with Jesus, even more to the forefront of their minds would have been the fact this was a Passover meal. So they would be thinking very much back to the actual Passover. Jews have always followed a very set script for the Passover. It's called the Seder. And the whole purpose of this was to remind everybody who took part of God's redeeming act as he brought the people out of Egypt, and also looking forward to expressing hopes for redemption again when the Messiah came. The angel of death, as you know, passed over the homes which had been smeared with blood. So we've got the blood again. The firstborn is killed. And that led to Pharaoh letting them go. it was the blood that enabled the Israelites, the firstborn of the Israelites, to be saved, and the blood that enabled them to get out. For us, Jesus' blood brings us life, where otherwise there would have been death. For us, it's the eternal consequences of death. Jesus himself, the Lamb of God, saves us from that. And part of the Seder is the sharing of four cups of wine. The Jews do know how to celebrate. And those four cups remind them of four promises that God gave at that first Passover. One of the promises, the suggestion is that this cup that we think of here was perhaps the third of those four cups, because it followed the breaking of the unleavened bread and the sharing of the unleavened bread, just as we share the bread first and then the cup. And the third cup was specifically to remind the people of God's redemption of them. And it also was used to symbolize the blood of the Passover lamb. So Jesus' words would have very much made them think about God's redemption, God buying us back the way he bought the Israelites back that first time, setting them free from slavery. And if you get a chance at any time to find a concordance, or if you're into computers, go on Bible Gateway, search the word redeem. I just flashed some up and I just thought, wow, this is just amazing. Just have a look and spend a few minutes thinking about what that word means. I haven't got time to go into it all tonight, but it's really worth doing because it is just such a rich word. In 1 Corinthians 11, Jesus says that the wine as his blood, that we must, whenever we drink it, do so in remembrance of him. Having a physical reminder is important for many of us. And throughout the Bible, there were always physical reminders of God's covenant promise. So with Noah, you've got the rainbow. With Abraham, you've got circumcision. Probably not quite such a nice idea. And with Moses, you've got the law. For us, the physical reminder of this covenant is set before us there with the wine. It reminds us repeatedly that Jesus died for us, that he shed his blood for us so that we can participate in that new covenant, which brings us the forgiveness and reconciliation. I would suggest it goes further than just a reminder. In a sense, as we take that cup, as we share that wine together, we are entering in again to that covenant with God. Whilst Jesus only died once, I'd like to suggest that it almost, we're remaking that covenant, or God's remaking that covenant with us as we think about communion. We come to the cross again for forgiveness and reconciliation. And amazingly, we don't just look at the wine, we actually drink it. We take it into ourselves. God's seal of that covenant. And when we think of a seal on an official document or something like that, in a sense, that seal makes it genuine. And it identifies the person who made the agreement. So it would be a specific thing that somebody could see, a specific signet ring or something like that. This is God's specific seal, his own son's blood. I think that's quite amazing. And then lastly, the fact that Jesus' blood is poured out for many. For those of us who are Gentiles, which I guess is most of us in this room, that is fantastic. God is not just the God of Israel. We are included in that new covenant. his blood isn't just being poured out for the Jews or for the disciples who were in that room. It's poured out for many. And probably as he said the words poured out for many, the disciples' minds, they were thinking of Isaiah, or perhaps he was thinking of Isaiah 53. He poured out his life unto death and was numbered with the transgressors, for he bore the sin of many and made intercession for the transgressors. Jesus clearly saw his death as a sacrifice which dealt with sin. Now, in pagan religions, sacrifices were performed to placate and to please and to pacify the deity. But it's different with God. Alec Mattia says, sacrifice is not a technique whereby man twists the arm of God. Sacrifice is a provision that God makes for certain people in certain situations. God is the mover in sacrifice. And how true that is in this covenant. It's God in the person of his son Jesus who is actually the sacrifice that seals the new covenant. I think that's amazing. He didn't give it blood of animals. He didn't seal it with a bit of wax. It's Jesus, his own son, who is the sacrifice. So, before us, we've got the bread and the wine. The wine being that physical reminder that it was Jesus' own blood which sealed the covenant, a covenant that dealt with our sin, which brought us a new relationship with God, not just for a few, but for many. As I said, it's not the blood of animals now, it's the blood of the Son of God, the creator of the universe. In 1 Peter 1, it says, you know that it was not with perishable things such as silver or gold that you were redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to you from your ancestors, but with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect. And I hope that, having been reminded of that, we will all be able to drink the wine in worship, in thanksgiving, and remembering just what that represents, just what that stands for, and to really engage with God's covenant, to take in that seal into ourselves as we receive the wine tonight.